welcome to the show. It's the best podcast that we know. We are glad to have you here. Let our voices massage your ears. It's free and it's online. It's an hour of your time. So welcome to the Brother Streep Show. Welcome to the Brother Streep Show.
Hello and welcome to the Brother Streep Show. I'm Simon Streep.
I'm Dill Streep. Hello.
Now, if you are very good at hearing, you might realize that there's currently not any sound, ambient noise behind us.
No guests just munching away at their breakfast in the background.
No, and that's because what actually happened at the beginning of this episode is we had some audio difficulties.
We did.
But luckily, we actually did get the majority of the audio recorded. But all it meant is that the beginning bit was lost. And in the beginning bit, our special guests, Alan Committee.
Yes, and Tats.
They were chatting about Alan Committee's show title, which was 180 Punchlines.
Yes, a show in which he's promised to give people 180 punchlines in an hour, which averages at 3 laughs a minute. His whole point is that when something is laugh a minute, that's not good enough anymore.
Yeah.
And that with this recession, we're actually needing to get more for our buck.
Indeed.
So the technique he's using in his show is to give a clicker to somebody in the audience, and then they get to just kind of click along every time the audience laughs, which is really fun.
It's really fun, and it's really effective because we actually reached the number we needed to.
We did, yes.
We watched the show. But let's not us tell you the story. We can now pick up the conversation with Alan and Tats. Here we go.
What's great is I imagine you must always achieve your goal, but if you didn't, because I was sitting there in that show you mentioned the first day and thinking, if you don't get to the 180 mark, say it's 140,
right,
you're going to stand there basically just in silence and people are just going to laugh until it gets up and you
that's registering
how close we're getting and we'll just keep laughing.
Yeah, you're hoping that just the point that we didn't make it will incite laughter.
Exactly.
The other thing is I could berate the audience for not doing their part, because of course any comedy experience is a two-way experience. I mean, I can give you 180 punchlines, but if I'm in a room on my own, and not to get too kind of wanky about this on a Friday morning, but Peter Brook says, if one person walks across a stage and no one is watching, is that theatre? It's certainly not comedy, is what I'm suggesting. You need the audience. And so if the audience aren't doing their job, then I would just shout at them for 20 minutes.
Yeah. But you guys are both, Tats, we've seen your show as well.
Sorry, I didn't know.
What did you say?
I'm so sorry. I misread the end of that sentence completely.
You guys are both very, very good at playing with your audience.
Thank you very much.
We only have ourselves to compare to.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if we've quite hit it on the head yet. But yeah, both very charming with your audience. Tats maybe a bit more kind of happy that his audience is there with him. Alan a bit
what
more
kind of
seems
is
angry
he?
At his audience at times.
I think it's a sweet, charming angry.
It's
more about, I think it comes down from being an ex-teacher, because it is that kind of condescending field. You know what I mean? Watch the answer, come on, you can do it, and if they get the wrong answer, then just actually crap on them for giving.
Yeah.
It's that feeling.
Okay.
But it's fun to do that with
an
audience.
It's very fun to watch.
It is very fun to watch. Tats, you have a lot of natural charm, which I think
Thank you so much.
So nice to see. I do get the feeling, though, like you could go out there and do anything and people would still like you. You could probably just slap the whole front row and so long as you're smiling at the time, they're going to be like, yeah, this is good. This is good comedy.
It's a weird thing to hear, because it's not something I didn't know that I had it until I got on stage. And when you say that, I go, I don't know what I do that makes.
I think you just look genuinely excited to be up on stage, making people laugh.
I think it's your like smile. You've got a good smile, good face.
I think it's the best thing a comedian has that he doesn't have to work, or she doesn't have to work for, is likability. If you have likability, your job is 40% done. Obviously, you want to have funny as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
But if you have funny and you're not likable, you don't have a career. That is the bottom line. I really believe that.
Mm, true.
So if you've got charm and you've got it, you don't have to work at it. You don't even have to know why you've got it. Just love
that. How long have you been doing stand-up?
7 minutes. I just started just after 10 this morning, actually.
You've got three laughs already.
I think it's going quite well.
Do you know what I really enjoyed and I literally haven't forgotten this punchline, because it's just something I didn't, when you're talking about MacGyver.
Yes.
And you say, there's a joke that Alan has. He goes, MacGyver, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. And he had this mullet. He has this that's my Alan
that's very good, actually.
This mullet, he has this, you're talking to an American lady.
Yes.
He has this mullet, ma'am, this mullet. And he has all sorts of things that he never had, or something like that.
Yeah, he can find everything that he didn't have.
He can find everything that he didn't have.
Yeah.
A bazooka, a water pipe, and young Taiwanese woman. That third one took me by such surprise. I was like, this is fantastic. This guy is good.
It's a real episode, actually.
That young Taiwanese woman would be the punchline that hooked all your audiences.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, young Taiwanese woman is a punchline that I use more often than I should. I attach it to any joke that's not working.
How do you like your coffee, young Taiwanese woman?
I love that. I love comedy because it's such a, for me, because I'm such a student of the thing. Like I'm a bit nerdy about it.
Mm.
And when you, that line is just such, you know, when you go, this will work everywhere. It's just that good. It's like a cover drive in cricket where you go,
does it work in Taiwan?
Now, Tats has brought up cover drive because we're leaving your podcast when we finish this. And believe me, we're not saying it must already end. It's been one of the more exciting 14 minutes yet. But we are both warming up, even as we're talking to you, because we're multi-skilled. You'll notice that we've been limbering up because we have a comedian's cricket game. And the fact that you're talking about a cover drive suggests that you played cricket. You're a cricket man, or you?
Do you know what? I played under 15C.
Yep.
For a couple of games.
At which age, though? No,
I was 15. I was four. I was in high school.
Yeah.
It was a very short career, but I was very happy with how it ended. We were in practice, right? Yeah. And I was playing wicket keeper.
Okay.
And the bowler came up to bowl the ball. The guy nicked the ball.
Mm.
Guys, instinctively,
yes.
I dove.
Yes.
To my right.
Yes.
And the ball went slap bang into my one glove. I stretched out one arm.
Oh, man, that's a beautiful thing.
When that happened, I was like, I'm done. I'm literally peaked.
Leave at the top.
And I was like, I've experienced cricket.
Yeah.
No regrets. But in short, yes, I have. I have played cricket.
Well, I'm hoping to see some of that magic a little later.
are you joining with us?
You better believe it. I'm one of the founding members of that game, so if you don't mind.
We were invited along by Sivan Gesi. I feel like I just need to mention him now because he gets mentioned in all our podcasts.
He's everywhere, isn't he?
He is.
And I want to say that in a positive light, but I...
Finally.
When we were chained to Angel, we developed a theory that if you say his name three times, he will just pitch up.
Not even three times, if I'm honest.
That's, so, what was it like working with Nick Rabinowitz? Because we are going to have him on tomorrow's show and we want to get all the dirt.
I loved working with Nick. When I met him, I was doing an open spot, I think, at Parker's in Joburg, which is a comedy club.
Yeah.
He was headlining, he saw me, and then he saw something that made him go, hey, is a young guy.
A smile,
Well, I got him. And next thing, a couple of months later, I get a call, hey, would you like to open for me? Now, for a young dude, that's like huge.
Yeah.
So immediately I was like, yes, and I'm just glad that he's a very nice guy. Because he does long runs, and if sometimes you work with people and you're like, you're funny on stage, but I don't really like hanging with you off stage. So,
do you want to list some of those comedians? Who are those?
Oh, no.
I thought you were going into an interesting area.
Oh, no.
All right, well, then I'm going to put my list away.
I'm at that point now where I'm like, who's on the lineup?
Yeah.
Because like the people you work with or I work with, it's part of the joy of the job, you know,
on stage,
but also it's like, it's exciting when I hear I'm with certain people and we are going to create or put on a show for an audience. It's
I'm going to be honest, that answer was very nice, but I was hoping for a bit more dirt. I wanted to say Nick tomorrow.
You can say from Nick, because when I knew Nick, he was 2 years younger than me, or maybe a year younger at Westford.
Yeah.
And I remember meeting him, he was a sullen, snotty. No, he really was. He didn't say people. As it turned out, he was just pretty shy, or at least kind of not particularly socially active, if you will. But I remember if you had said to me, there's a million things that boy will become one day.
Yeah.
List them. I promise you, comedian would not have been
Undertaker number one.
It was. And when he phoned me years later, he had just been employed by Nick Ellenberg and was helping out at. And he said, I'm thinking of going into theatre.
Mm.
I remember having to really bite my tongue thinking, someone's got to say something to this lad. And then he said to me, I think I'm going to do some comedy. And I was like, oh, how did this happen?
Isn't that the worst though? Like when people, because you watch people, or people say they want to do it. I think it's easier when they haven't done it yet to be like, no.
Yes.
But once they've done it and you've seen it and you're like, oh no, you don't have the thing.
Yeah.
So I want to, if I can jump, so what was your, because I often say to people, someone yesterday said to me, I've got some stuff, I don't know if I'm good or not, and I think the obvious answer is today the thing about stand-up is you only have to get up on stage and do it.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the only requirement. You don't have to study. You don't have to do anything. It's take that first leap, which is the biggest leap you'll take in your career, and your stand-up career, is to start and do 2 or 3 minutes. That's all you have to do. And my feeling is that you will know within a minute, whether you're dying or not, you will know within a minute whether this is something you can do for the rest of your life.
I disagree.
Really?
Because a big part of what we do... So I hosted a show called SA's Got Talent, which is like a talent show.
Yep. Yeah.
Literally thousands of people auditioning. I met every single one of them because I was the host. So I'm the, hey, welcome, what are you doing? Good luck. Hey, welcome, what are you... There's parents there supporting kids who are horrible.
Yes.
But there's no sense of awareness of the horribility of these of these people.
Right. Yeah.
And then the acts themselves distraught. Like when the judges give the critique and they try to be nice, but sometimes it's like, yo, you're so bad. But when they come off stage and when I'm seeing their parents, the anger and the response, it's almost like people don't have a natural awareness.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying if it's something that you, because of course the awareness only comes later, and that for me is the next stage, because if you can't decide, if you can't realize yourself whether you're working or not, you're never going to get better. But initially you'll know whether you're meant to be on stage or not, because there are people who go, I tell jokes around a briar, I'm great around my friends. Then you get on stage and you're in front of a crowd,
right,
and you know, fuck, this is not sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but I'm not on stage, but I am on, do you know what I mean? And you know immediately. You were performing before you did stand-up.
It's true.
So that's already, you knew you wanted to be a performer.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I agree. When I got kicked, I did a comedy competition. And when they kicked me out eventually, something in me was like, I hear you, but I can do this.
I can do this.
And your guys' first gigs, were they good gigs or terrible gigs?
No, mine was a terrible one. Well, as a stand-up, I trained as an actor, so again, I knew I was a performer, and so you come with a little bit of confidence. You go, well, I can't be. I mean, I know what to do on a stage, but it is very different to tell jokes. And
yes,
and so I went up. Dave Levinson had a little awful little hole in the wall in Cape Town, must have been late '90s. It was, in fact, it was about '97. And I went up and I did 5 minutes dressed in. I'm so deeply embarrassed. And actually, now that I think about it, I don't think my career has actually gone anywhere. I was in a teacher's gown, you know, those graduation gowns.
Because
I thought, well, I'm a teacher, I'll use that as a persona.
Yeah.
And I had one or two gags, which thinking back, there was something there. I was doing stuff around Comrades Marathon because it was Comrades time. And I just remember going, oh, this is so much harder than I thought. Why are they not? Because in my head, those are killer.
I thought walking out with a gown, I'd already get a laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, why is he wearing the gown?
Exactly. But so it was hard, the first one. But that's good.
It's interesting for me, because you, one of the few, and I say few very intentionally, I want to say only because I don't know who's has a theater background doing stand-up.
Right.
Where I watch and I don't see thespian.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's like a nice comic.
I just see good performer,
right?
But in my head, it doesn't translate to
an actor trying to do. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because sometimes you get those. It feels very learnt. Most times.
Yeah.
Most times, it's so painful to watch.
Learning.
You're right.
That confidence that you're talking about is interesting to me. Because I'm not a theater person, but I don't know what training you had. And what mindset you have where you go, I can do this.
Right.
But it has the backup of because I'm trained. And then you get on. What did you find out when you got on?
Well, exactly that. That the first and most important thing is it mustn't feel like it's a perform. It mustn't feel, it helps when it doesn't feel like a performance, but it feels like you are talking to an audience.
Yeah.
And I think there's a thing about stand-ups taking at least 4 or 5 years to finding their actual voice.
Mm.
Most of us, when we start, most of us, it's a generalization, we have people that we've either watched or looked up to and we mimic stuff. So if it's an international comic, you hear, you speak in the same rhythms, you might even touch on the same kind of topics.
Yeah.
You know, everyone, when Eddie Izzard was huge, everyone was doing Eddie Izzard. I had Mark Banks was my mentor.
Yeah.
I used to love watching his stuff. Yeah. And so for years, and in fact, my Q review today is obviously an old cynical bastard who actually said it's very Banks-like. So obviously also a fan of Mark. And which I don't, listen, I take that as a compliment.
Huge compliment. Yeah.
But it takes a while to find your own voice. And I do now believe like I do my own thing. But but you have to start somewhere, either mimicking or as you say, preparing stuff quite strongly. And it's to find just that ease as if, because really it isn't. We're not just standing there and talking. Sometimes we are, but we've got stuff that we've prepared, or we have an idea of what's going to work. And the longer you do it, the better you become at instinctively knowing that will work and that will be edgy, I'm not sure, or that I'm going to give it a go, but I'm almost sure it won't work, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. And those kind of instincts only play out over time with experience. But you have to understand that it's just about looking as if you're making stuff up and talking to an audience and talking to them, not performing to them, actually engaging with them. I remember young comics, Stuart Taylor was one, and Stuart won't mind me saying this. When I directed Stuart in one of his first shows, Joker in the Pack, Stuart had watched a lot of my stuff and other comics, and he liked the idea of talking to an audience. So he would go to an audience, so where are you from? And she'd go, Plumstead. And he'd go, ha ha. Now, Kalula. And I'd say, if you're going to ask them something, then you've got to have a joke. Otherwise, don't ask them. And it's that thing, we know what the mechanics are, we just don't know how to do it. Yeah.
Totally.
Now, he's absolutely brilliant at it. But, you know, what's your name, Richard? Well, now Kalula is interesting because. So, you know, it's stuff that you learn.
I'm glad this has gone down a more comedy nerd route, because I've got a very specific comedy nerd question for you, Tats. So every stand-up seems to have their own sort of comfortability with what kind of story are they okay with telling, and how much of it needs to be true for it to sort of make the story. So obviously the average audience member might not realize that stories that are being told are actually completely fictional in some cases. So for you specifically, Tats, in your set where you talk about going to the beach with Skulk Bezuidenhout, what is your level of invention to reality in that story?
All of it is true. It's literally all of it is true, I think, except the
Fact that I went to the beach.
So if just for context in terms of listeners, the joke is about me spending a weekend in Cape Town and deciding to hang around Skulk because I wanted to see like the Cape Town that he experiences. Skulk took me to a private beach, which he did with his girlfriend. I'm trying to think back of the joke. Everything is true about that joke.
Okay.
Climbing up onto a rock, jumping
climbing
off,
up onto the rock, the swimming,
all the stuff.
The whiteness of the beach.
Yeah,
and the whole joke is about the awkwardness of, because I was literally, you know, when you the joke is when you walk into a situation that you weren't ready for, and you, no matter what race you are, but you're the only one of your kind, where it's like that feeling of,
how am I going
to
get through
this? I'm going to have to now constantly be conscious of what I'm doing, because it's a constant fitting in, because I don't look like I belong there. And that joke is literally 100% true. I did a gig with Skulk in East London before we came here. And when I walked off stage after introducing him, he went on stage and went, just want to start by saying everything Tats just said, absolutely true.
That's great.
It's great when it happened. It wasn't funny, but when I because it was all the awkward and all the feelings. But when we left, I was like, "Yo, man, that was something I need to talk about." You which is how I do my comedy. I used to try and look for material, until I found that looking for material is more tedious because I'm always feeling stuff. Yeah. So now I just write based on whatever makes me feel something. So that beach experience wasn't funny when it was happening, but I remember I had a lot of feelings, and then I just kind
of
massaged it into
a routine.
So you're more 100% sort of truthful stories, things that happened. Alan, where would you say you stand on?
That's the ideal, of course, I think. Yeah. And because exactly that, you don't have to, the generating machine is you.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, you can just find it. And I love that phrase of massaging material. So that's the first point of call. And I will always have a little bit of that in my full shows. In an hour, I've got 90 minutes of new material once a year. That's a lot of material.
90?
Well, actually 2 hours with an interval, because Peter Turin
says
you have to have an interval. So, but equally, there's only so much stuff that can become material.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
You know what I mean? Or at least, because the other thing that then becomes to define you is the nature of your audience. So I don't know Tats's audience in terms of, but it would strike me,
I don't know Tats's audience.
In a comedy space like a club or a comedy venue, they're going to be more open to listening to anything. I'm in a theater where, for example, I'm playing family friendly. So there are things that I've done in my life where they're great stories for other comedians, but I can't share that no matter how I massage it. My audience are going to need mental massages afterwards to deal with it. So then I go for, but I do, I'm always writing. I've got, as we all do, I'm sure, use notes extensively on our phone.
Yeah.
And you go back, and when I've got a show, I'll kind of handpick and try and, again, massage that into if I've got a theme. But sometimes you've just got to create stuff. Also, you then get and this is where you can get lazy equally, yeah. but it, where you have kinds of jokes that work. So
yeah.
I do a thing, my rand thing, for example, is an example of a word rant where so I can funny. Just keep talking. Yeah. That I can do on almost anything. So yes. if I'll go, well, I haven't got a thing like that in the show. I can do something on menus. Yeah. So I'm going to do, I didn't know if I should have the waffles, because if you have waffles that do, and then you go onto the yeah. rant, and yeah. it's the same structure, but you can...
Yeah.
Adapt
the fun of that is you can play with it for as long or as short correct. As the audience is allowing.
Going for it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes
yeah.
you can push until you've lost them completely and yeah. then just a little bit more and they all yes. come back.
It's a very Stuart Lee thing
to
do. It's
great. To come back yeah. to something, did we say this on air about the punchline thing, the Ethiopian woman? I don't know if that was off air or not.
Taiwanese. We mentioned her earlier.
Is that I think it's quite nice to have a story that's based in reality that did happen.
Yeah.
And then to tell that story, get as much comedy out of it, and then I try and then stretch it to surreal or to yes, mad yeah, moments as well.
Totally.
Because then it's quite nice to really take it to its end degree.
I think what that's, in my book, the more honest way of doing comedy, yes. where people can see what the reality is right. and what the lie is straight away. So right. we do a very silly thing where we say that Patricia DeLille phoned us up and had a long conversation, and no one in the audience in that moment is thinking this really happened.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's the best response. Is that you want people to be going like, okay, cool, that is... definitely not true, and I'm enjoying that. I think it's weird when comedians tell these very fantastical stories and you just takes 1 second to go like, that actually could have never happened.
Yeah. yeah. How could all those series of events fall to this perfect yeah. punchline? So unlikely. What I perfect. Like about your act, Alan, as well, you were mentioning earlier how you kind of will do a bit, you know that works here, you'll stretch there, and okay, that's not going to work, but you seem to always have three or four things kind of in the holster that'll get you straight back into like the good books. If something fails,
yeah.
you look over there and you make a joke at them, and then we're back with you, and now you're referring to your clicker person to correct. Get another laugh.
But, and that so just feels comes like with you're experience never come because off you've, the you've got to have the... if you will, the vessel of all that. You know, I've got yeah. probably 4.5 hours of, if not more, of just stand-up stuff. So yeah. If it's not working in a show like I'm doing here at the Fest, for whatever reason, or the audience yeah. have gone off the boiler, but you can go back to either stuff that you know is tried and tested, or, as you say, reference something that's happened that was funny yeah. in the show that yeah. you can bring back. But and I also kind of work with pace and speed. So my whole thing is to try and... I don't believe all my gags are 100% genius pieces of work, but I know that with pace, Mal Miller used to do that. Mal at his best used to do a 20-minute set where you could not have a moment to breathe. You were either laughing or yeah. missing his jokes. Yeah, that's yeah, all yeah. you had time for. And by the end, you were like, whether that was funny or not, I've just...
Yeah,
I couldn't.
Totally.
And I yeah. love that. I love the pace of just going bang, bang, bang,
have
bang.
You ever watched Tim Vine?
I yes,
feel like you would
superb.
Love Tim Vine.
Yeah, yeah, he's brilliant.
It's the exact same idea. Of, yeah. Just loads of jokes, and he will know
yeah,
that.
And he'll like, know some of them are terrible. Yeah. And sometimes you're telling them because they're terrible, yeah. and you know that. But if you do it with pace... you get a big laugh out
totally.
Of it.
Totally. Yeah. It's the kind of thing that I don't know if you heard him is you'll go like, Velcro, what a ripoff. And they'll just move on. They'll just move on to the next.
Yeah.
The next
I mean, Tim Vine.
Yeah. It's beautiful. You
I think,
check it out.
I think it's a hard thing to accept for comedians because we invest so much in the laughter.
Yeah.
Like I did a theater workshop with an actor in Joburg, theater actor.
Mm.
And it was just comedians in the room. And he hates working with comedians because he's like, we are the laziest performers. Because so what happened was, one of the assignments was, it was such a weird assignment, but it worked. Yeah. So he says, bring a joke that you have the next day
yeah.
that has a lot of assonance. So write it out
okay.
and then bring it the next day. And then there was a comedian who has a thing, his name is kind of Farhan, right? So the joke that Farhan has is, hi, I'm Muslim, and on a good day, I look, oh, I'm going to rip off his joke.
That's all right, do it.
He goes, oh, something like, on a good day, I look like Enrique Iglesias, and on a bad day, I look Pakistani, or whatever.
Right.
And then he stopped him, slowed him down, and then he wrote the joke out. Yeah. And then he says, okay, I want you to put emphasis on this word,
yeah.
this
yeah.
word, this word, this word. On a good day, and,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And by the time Farhan did the joke again, literally the whole room was like, wow.
Now that's, I love that. because that's where I think my theatre background has helped me. And often when I'm working with comedians, so for example, someone who's doing very well in this festival and who's just one of the nicest people in the industry is a young female comic called Angel Blythe.
Right. Mm.
Now, Angel, I worked with Angel when she was literally promotion girl on one of the funny festivals, and we'd laugh about it all the time. But she looked at it and she said, and I remember the day she said to Kev Orkin and I want to do this.
Yeah.
And again, you can't stop but have the feeling of like, oh, man. But to her credit, yes, she is 6 years down the line and she's playing to full houses and she's doing the work, and there's not a harder working comedian in the country. She really, but she's the kind of person, when I have on occasion worked with her and when I watch her, she's not a natural performer, or in a sense that she's not trained as a performer. She's come as an ordinary, what Peter Turin calls a civilian. and where you don't understand is how to lift words, how to put emphasis on stuff, how to set up stuff. And I know that's something that acting has helped me.
Yeah.
So I know I can get a bigger laugh if I set up that word in the setup.
Mm.
Yeah. And if I don't punch that word, I will get a 7 laugh, but if I punch the word, I'll get a 9.5 laugh.
Mm. Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Peter Turin, because I've got a musical idea.
Go on.
And
I'll just call him up now. Yeah, we can talk about this.
I'm not connected to him, but you mentioned it in your show, and I've had this idea for ages, and you're going to love this.
Go on.
Musical She Wrote. All right.
I love it already.
Love the title. Love it.
The Jessica Fletcher musical.
Yes.
And we can even figure it out right here, because Tats, you come from a music background.
You know what? Just before you continue, you never know that you are getting old. Like, that's the end of the sentence. Because I realize, like, you know, people my age go, I miss the R&B of the 90s.
Yeah.
Right.
And when I listen to that now, I go, yo, man, that was like 20 odd years ago.
Yeah. Right.
And we don't click. Yeah. So when you say Murder, She Wrote, all of us here are like excited. Like, yes, okay, that's good. And then I go,
but that's 30 years ago.
That was 30 years ago.
But that's what's so good about it, because the nostalgia thing is huge.
It's huge. Big thing of South Africa is nostalgia. I mean, for whatever reason, we love it. And she, 30 years ago, Murder, She Wrote. She was in her 60s then. Yeah. I think she's in her 90s, Angela
Lansbury.
I
don't know if we want to get the actual Angela Lansbury for the musical.
I think you're losing out
there. I apologize. Continue your musical She Wrote.
So, all right, so
musical She Wrote.
You could be Seth. I think that would be a good, the Dr. Seth.
Yeah.
Big opening number, Welcome to Cabot Cove. I think that'll work really well.
In the number, do we lose people already?
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
How many of us listeners at this point?
People die as the number goes.
Welcome to Cabot Cove is brilliant. Keep going. Yes, come on. Give me something else.
I thought, like, she, at some stage, I think there should be a really hard, warming moment where she kind of breaks down a bit and she sings a song about why does everyone around me die, and it's a very just like,
because it must have impacted her psychologically.
Definitely, it must have ruined her.
Yes.
Tats, the only problem is I don't know if there were any black people in there.
I was so waiting either for a confession of that or for you to try and wrangle me into the place.
This will be a new version. I think we need a black sheriff. I think that's
I will accept, unless she goes to like a black neighborhood to drop off something and someone dies and
get
then she
a
has
typewriter
to
fixed.
There we go.
Yeah.
The keys are
sticking. Is she still on a typewriter, do you think, or is she kind of
moved up?
Well, the thing is, I remember the series enough to know that at some stage she did move away from a typewriter, but onto one of those electronic typewriters. not quite a computer. But anyway, so if you can tell Peter about this
idea. I love that idea.
Let's get it done.
So what's it? Musical She Wrote.
I feel like that's why you guys called Alan here.
Yeah.
Mark Banks and I had a thing many years ago when we were overseas, and I can't remember why. We were watching musicals. We were in London, so we were watching a lot of stuff. And it suddenly struck us, there was a chord in a show called Mac and Mabel, which is an 80s musical, and it did reasonably well. The book is weak, but the music is strong. And halfway through it, we both turned to each other and went, that's the Murder, She Wrote theme tune, in kind of embedded. And then we couldn't stop but hear Murder, She Wrote in every piece of music. So we have a theory that theme tune is somewhere in, and I think that's a good start to, maybe that's something that we could put into the show as well.
Nice.
Now,
one.
We like to do this all, I guess, and I realize we're running out of time because of all the sound difficulties we had. And that is a quick fire question round. So we'll ask you questions. We'll score you on your answers.
Right.
And there are points involved. You can actually win this round. Which is
okay.
Very exciting.
I like winning. I'm a bit competitive.
Do you guys think there's like porridge at this place? Like porridge.
Oh, he's doing that only because the waitress is at our table.
like porridge or like mousse, like a bowl of.
I don't know.
You have to have porridge,
but
can I have oats, please? With hot milk. Thank you so much, madam.
There we go.
I tried to just put that in there seamlessly.
Very nice.
Very good. It's good. We did lose a bunch of conversation earlier, so it's good to have this fluff.
Jump filler. Yeah. Literally.
I feel like it would be a shame to not quickly mention the show names. Noel's mentioned them at the end again. But Tats Nkonzo is, Privileged. Your show.
That is the name of the show.
But now your debut one-man show is possibly the greatest play on words I've ever read.
Oh, wow. Tell me more.
Can't tats this.
Yeah.
I love that.
We love a good pun. Cheesy, though.
Can't tats this.
Oh, no, that's good. I like that. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Did you walk out to that song? I hope so.
I didn't.
Did you have big kind of MC Hammer
opportunity? I didn't.
MC Hammer pants and everything.
When I think of that title, I'm like, it's almost, it's funny, because in comedy, this is my... It's my fault. It's my what do you mean? It's my weakness because I watch people do corny things, like you were mentioning Tim Vine, and I see audiences laugh. But whenever I think of corny things, I'm always like, that's corny, and I will never do it. And it's to my detriment because audiences love.
They do, and it's the trick is to sell it. Is how do you sell corny? Yeah. Because selling corny is fun.
Yeah.
If you give it 100%, they will buy it.
You just have to embrace the cheese.
It's like being with a dog and going, if you're fearful, the dog will, which is all bullshit because the dog will bite you anyway.
Yes, but let me tell you.
All right, let's do this. Quick fire.
Let's do it.
Okay, Alan.
Yes.
Who would win?
17.
I'm already wrong.
Question first.
Quick fire answers or questions? Okay.
Who would win in a fight, Evita Bezuidenhout or Johan van der Walt?
Oh, Johan van der Walt. He's vicious. I know Evita thinks she's verbally vicious. Johan, fight for his life.
I'll give you a point for that. I would have thought it was Evita, but you did justify your answers.
No. I'm very clear on that.
All right, Tats, hot water bottle or electric blanket?
I want to say hot water bottle only because I'm using one now and every night I wake up and my throat is dry.
Right. What?
I blame it on the electric blanket. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to go.
Okay, well, you're wrong because there's a water crisis, so you should be using
it. Oh, no. You thinking that I care. My bad. You misread me.
All right. Yeah. There are definitive answers to this quiz.
Right.
A camel is a horse designed by?
A committee.
Correct, that's you.
Thank you.
What was that meeting like?
A committee.
Long and tedious, much like my shows sometimes.
Who came up with the hump? Okay. If given, Tats, this is for you. If given a voucher for free tattoo of anything, what would you get?
Oof. A free tattoo, what would I get?
Yeah. Any size, shape, colors?
That is a hard one because I've never thought of getting a tattoo.
Mm. Right.
What about Nick Rabinowitz?
Maybe right,
a full length Nick Rabinowitz down the back.
Down
so
the back.
Even things were going badly, you just turned around.
Next material. Okay, I think I'll give Alan the point for that one.
Alan, take my point. It's on.
Hijacking.
All right, nice. How many kgs is the comedian KG?
That's a very that's an excellent question, and he's a lovely, lovely fella. Yeah. How many kgs? He's only one, isn't he? Because he is kg.
Well done. That's a
thank you very
answer.
Much. Trick question.
All right, Tats, will you join the Brother Streep a cappella show that we bring up here in the next 2 to 3 years?
I would absolutely, and I'm not even joking. I would absolutely not do that.
Well, you're honest, but you're not scoring any points.
Unfortunately, you're out of musical she wrote. Who wrote Moby Dick?
I do know that. Who wrote Moby Dick? Ahab, and he's now what's the first line?
Ishmael.
I am Ishmael.
That's not the right answer.
Oh, but who wrote Moby Dick? God, I do know this. I give up. Yeah.
It was Herman Melville.
It was. Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure lives in Belleville. So that's...
Wow. Now, the way he sold that corny line, which was with kind of just throwaway, didn't work. He's going to have to work a lot more.
Yeah, we need to take tips from Alan for selling the corn.
He didn't commit to that.
All right.
Have you ever done, my bad.
No, we're not done. There's like 10 of these things.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Would you rather travel back in time to dinosaurs or forward in time to flying cars?
Ooh, I would rather go back, actually.
Yes, you got it right.
Yeah.
Anything with dinosaurs is the right answer.
I think not even dinosaurs. Yeah. It feels like in the future it's going to get more messy. It's already messy, 2017 messy. Technology and
cool.
Yeah. And also flying cars, we're not far from that. I mean, we aren't. That's not going forward.
You're yeah, probably you going go forward for a speed bump in Grahamstown, you have a flying car.
In a hired car, you do. Yes, you do.
I would definitely go to the simpler days.
Cool. Alan, what is your favorite seafood?
My favorite seafood?
Yeah.
Calamari.
Really?
Thank you.
You can't just steal.
That's a good steal.
You can't just steal. That's not even funny.
It is funny. It starts with a C.
Oh, I see.
I appreciate
you. Is that
you.
What Come you were on. Doing
That's what I did.
Come on. Oh, no, that's funny.
I'm giving that one
that's
to
funny. Tats. Give him a point. Yeah. I didn't even see that joke
he
coming.
He can have it. I've got a cheesy joke in seafood.
Guys,
how about this?
Can I just say, I'm proud of what I just did. I want to stop time and go, I'm impressed.
That is true.
Let's try this. I want to see if Alan likes my performance in this one.
All right.
So I'm on a seafood diet.
Mm-hmm.
I seafood and I eat it.
Yeah.
So long as it's seafood.
Okay, I like the reversal of that.
Yeah, I feel like you were too performy with it.
Yeah, it was too performy. And also you then flubbered over a line there.
Yeah, I did. I know.
And you got nervous.
He's workshopping it.
I'll give it to Angel.
Yeah.
4 or 5 years, he'll find his voice. Okay.
Just
Tats,
to me now.
Who's got more talent? SA, Britain, or America?
Ah, shucks. Oh, I'm gonna say American only because they have more people.
Yeah, but that has
to
be the answer.
That is actually the answer that I had.
That has to be the answer.
All right,
and you didn't wuss out. Patriotic and liary.
Alan, let's go.
Alan, what is the worst song in the world?
Calamari. Oh no, I'm one question behind.
You've gone back in time.
Yeah.
The worst song in the world.
Yeah.
The worst song in the world. I know.
You really feel that.
I'll accept anything that's a song.
Anything that's a song at all.
You're like Rebecca in your audience now.
That's right.
Just anything. Say a word.
The worst song in the world is most of the back catalogue of ABBA.
Okay. Well, do you know what? I will accept that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I do not like ABBA. And I also had Eternal Flame by the Bangles.
Oh, no. You see, I quite like Eternal Flame.
Oh, no, Alan. That song is horrible.
No, it is horrible, but I like it because they say, my love burns like an eternal flame, which is just bad thrush. if that's burning, that is just no good. If your love is just an eternal flame of burning, get a doctor.
I didn't see that one. I don't know if it deserves a point.
Tats,
I've given Tats, a point.
Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
What?
Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
A toad?
A toad.
It's a joke. It's an old joke. I'm trying to remember what the
punchline is. Are you saying a toad?
A toad. Yeah. the accent is very important.
Let's see if we can work it out. A toad?
Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
Toad. A toad.
A toad.
So stupid.
What is it? What sounds like?
Lightning.
No, give me something, yeah.
A toad when it's struck by lightning.
Do you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning?
Okay, no way. He's trying to do a...
I see him. Jamaican.
Jamaican. So a toad.
A toad when it comes to lightning. It goes a charming.
No? The answer is the same thing that happens to everything else. That's from the first X-Men film. It's Storm.
Okay,
Storm, the one thing Storm will never do.
That's the one thing.
I remember that, actually.
Yeah, of course you do, man.
Before
she zapped him,
which I don't think is a very... Because I think they were doing the hasta la vista kind of classic line.
Yeah,
delivery.
It has to work.
It didn't really work.
It's a famously bad line from a film, but some of our listeners will have appreciated an X-Men reference.
You know what's a nice thing in terms of... is that someone said to me... say beer can.
Yes.
You know this thing.
Beer can.
Yeah. And then that's a Jamaican saying bacon. And once you get that in your head, you can't get it out. I love that.
That is a good one. Mm. I should have said that. Do you know what happens to a beer can when you're struck by lightning? Anyway, carry on.
Did I get a point for that, by the way?
No.
You
a jammin'?
No, you didn't. It is funny, but it's the wrong answer.
Alan, would you rather live in Westeros in Game of Thrones or Beaufort Westeros in the Karoo?
You're going to be upset with me. I've never watched Game of Thrones.
No, me...
Really?
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go with a Karoo.
Well, that, you know what? That's correct, because the other one is fictional. So you wouldn't have been able to live there anyway.
Is Game of Thrones not real?
No. It seems real.
It's only loosely based on
what's happening in South Africa at the moment.
All right. Tats, pick a card. Pick a card. Pick a card. Imaginary card. Pick a card. Do you know what it is? No. Do you know what it is? Okay. Let me say 3 of diamonds.
4 of hearts.
Okay. That's no point for you then.
Alan, what is
That's
eating...
so much like Conrad Koch. Anyway, what... Yeah.
What is eating Gilbert Grape?
Of the Grapes of Wrath.
I'll give you a point for that. I would have also accepted aphids.
That got the biggest laugh. I didn't get it at all.
That's funny though. I think it's surreal.
Alan just likes the word aphids.
It's a great word.
It's a good comedy word.
Aphids, absolutely a comedy word.
What is it?
Aphids are those little things on
tiny little green things on roses.
Tiny little buckies on roses, like they
eat the leaves and the petals and all.
And but it's a great comedy word. Aphids.
All right, Tat. Name a famous professor.
Xavier.
Oh yeah, I didn't think of that one. I would have accepted
that's
Plum,
2.5.
Nutty Professor, or Professor Chaos from South Park,
or from Tintin, yes. Professor Calculus.
What, really?
Yes, from Tintin.
I do you remember Tintin? I don't.
I remember all professor. The other characters from Tintin. No Professor Calculus.
Calculus with little glasses. He used to work with the Thompson and Thompson twins.
I remember them.
Oh my god, I can't believe you don't remember that.
We're not as old as you.
Yeah, you might
be.
You're actual old.
You still have the editions of Tintin where they had that racist book.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all of Tintin. Tintin is the most racist character ever
stuff
in the world.
Bringing out now.
Now
two more. Let's fly through.
Tell me what you want. What you really, really want.
This to kind of come to an end now because our cricket game is going to end soon.
That is correct.
I was going to.
All right, Tats. Cherry Coke or Vanilla Coke?
That's a hard one. I was going to say normal Coke.
Go. No, that's not an option. Cherry Coke or Vanilla Coke. Come on.
That's horrible.
That's horrible.
Dude.
That's unpleasant.
Vanilla Coke or Cherry Coke? Yeah. I'm going to go, and I'm only saying this because I think that's what you have, and I want
that's
the point.
What I'm hoping.
Okay. Which? I'm going to go with Cherry Coke.
It's wrong. It's vanilla. It's vanilla. It tastes the most like a Coke float. Come on, man.
Alan, your last question.
That's a horrible question.
Your last question before for your cricket game.
Can we get a score update?
What is Alan Committee's deepest, darkest secret?
I'm so glad you finally asked me this.
Yes.
Yes.
I've got some
answers
here.
That's all we've
got
time for. So have you actually got some answers?
So we've been asking this question in all our quickfires to all our guests that we've had so far. So I have potential answers here from some of the comedians at the festival.
About me?
Yeah. About you.
That's amazing. Oh, I want to hear all of them.
So I want to see if you get any of them right.
Okay. And are they? Do you think they're true, though, that people know about me?
I think most of them are.
Give me a comedian and I'll tell you what they think my deepest, darkest
secret. And then he says which one it is.
Okay, all right. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. So someone said that you have a pic of them in a bikini on your phone.
That's Angel Blythe Campy.
Correct. Someone said that you bought your Audi from a homeless person.
That would be Simon Gessie, but I didn't.
That was Stuart Taylor.
That's Stuart Taylor.
Someone said that despite your surname, you find it very difficult to commit to plans. He said, Alan, commit me, is what he actually said.
Wow. So they don't know me very well because that's the exact opposite. Who was that?
But he did it more with like a kind of colored, hey committee.
So it's Dalen Oliver.
Yeah, there we go.
He wouldn't know, he's a teacher.
Someone who I think has only met you once, that doesn't know you very well, and obviously hasn't seen you in spandex, said that you're secretly transgender.
Bless. Yeah, and you know that's not
think
true.
Think of one of the international acts.
Is that, who's here now?
Yeah.
Stephen Camos.
No, the other one. The other international...
Oh, the Australian lass.
It is.
She's English.
British,
no, she's British. She's Michelle. No, what's her name?
Louise Ray.
I haven't seen the show. I must go and see it.
Someone said that you drive an Audi when in actual fact you should be driving a clown car.
I like that. My Audi is a bit of a clown car. Who's that?
That was Louisa Madinga. And then someone, I don't think you'll get this, but someone said, I'll tell you who it was. Wesley Cockerell said that you steal all of his good jokes.
Bless Wesley. Oh, shame. So his career ended before it started, didn't it? And I'm so sad about that.
Is your deep, darkest secret?
No.
Okay, good.
No. Those bodies will never be discovered, so don't worry about that.
All right, we have time for one last question.
Talk to me.
Tats, do you prefer using Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram.
Okay, and you have to justify your answer with the appropriate picture. I'm glad that you chose that, otherwise you'd have to have justified with 140 characters.
I would show you a picture of my kids.
Do you have kids?
Two.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
How old?
4 and 2.
No, but that's interesting. So
I'm a two-time dad, bro.
Wow. So does that make it all harder or easier or...
I'm just happy that my ex is very supportive. Like when I won the ovation, I sent her a text going, "We won an ovation," and I say "we," and this was a real text. I say, "This is touching."
Yeah, go on.
So I say we won an ovation, and I only say "we" because without you and the boys, I wouldn't be able to do all of this.
That is sweet.
That's very good.
So yeah.
And did she respond, or is that still unread on the text?
What an asshole! She did. Congratulations, Papa. And there was emoticons and blah, 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 blah. Beautiful. It's good.
Alan has 8 points. How many points?
Has done dismally with 5 out of 10.
There's no way.
But it was really funny and enjoyable. Well, you can catch Tats and Konzo at Is Privileged at the Masonic Back tonight at 10 p.m. or Saturday at 4 p.m. And just get hold of you on social media.
Yeah.
How so?
Guys, this has been really fun.
Just underscore, guys, this has been really fun.
Oh, Tats and Konzo, Tats and Konzo, T-A-T-S, Konzo.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's the part they don't need to spell.
I was going to say, Tats is easier to spell than Konzo. We're going to do it at Alan Committee, A-L-A-N, and then obviously Committee.
Yeah.
With the weird part of the spelling, but don't worry about that.
Yeah, catch Alan today at 9:30 at Kingswood, or tomorrow at 12 p.m. and 9:30. And do go check the play That Goes Wrong. We didn't have enough time to speak about it today, but it's very, very good. Mm. And
back
yeah.
at Theatre on the Bay in November, and in Monte Cassino in Joburg in September.
Awesome. Great. Yes. And because you won the quiz, you with can leave for your cricket
play
game.
That Goes Wrong. That's the thing I directed, which was fun. I get to what?
Because you won the quiz, you get to leave for your cricket game.
And choose the prestigious sugar packet.
If I go white sugar, then I'm racist. If I go brown sugar, then I'm actually patronizing my fellow guests.
Nobody's taken. Nobody else has taken both, but you're a big enough success that you can have both.
I'm just big enough that I need the sugar diabetes.
Thanks for being here with us.
This has been fantastic, really. It couldn't have been a nicer way to spend my Friday. Well, I mean, obviously I could have slept in, but this has been really good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Cheers.
Bye, guys.